You're listening to the Fifth Down Podcast, football for fans, by fans.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of Fifth Down. We are 48 hours away from kickoff 2014. Excited to be back with you again, covering all the action in the NFL. I'm your host, Adam Glass, alongside, as always, the blackest man in radio, my co-host, Ryan Jones.
That's the introduction.
We've been doing this show now for the past three NFL seasons. I've tried to bring you somewhat original takes on what's going on around the league, kind of from the fans' perspective, not the same thing, same cookie-cutter storylines you're going to see on NFL Total Access and SportsCenter and NFL Live and all those other shows. We have no sponsors, no advertising, no bosses, no FCC, and no real scripts, just our own armchair quarterback thoughts and opinions on what's going on around the league. As we mentioned every episode, follow us on Twitter, we're at FifthDownNFL. Like us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/FifthDownPodcast, and then on the website, it's FifthDown.org. We come to you live every Tuesday night. We recap everything that happened the previous week in the NFL, and then kind of give you a little bit of a breakdown of what to expect coming in the following week. So we've been through, I guess you want to consider it, 5 weeks of preseason football, including a Hall of Fame game and everything going on there. So you get a good feel of what's going on with all the teams. We saw figure 2.5 games, or figure 2 full games worth of time from the starting offense for most of these teams. Obviously, the third game, you see a good half or so of the starters, and the fourth preseason game, just kind of getting kinks out and filling up those last couple roster spots. To start on your side of the ball with you boys and you, the New York Giants, after watching the Hall of Fame game, we were, I don't know, super excited by some of the things we saw out of Big Blue in their new offensive system. They were quick, they were efficient, they were ready to use all the weapons that they had on offense and really attack their opponents. And the two of us pretty much came on the show and we were pretty optimistic. We liked what we saw. We thought that it was going to be a good year for the Giants, especially with the retooled secondary, some of the new toys that they got out there. And then they played 4 more preseason games. And at this point, now the preseason's over and we're getting ready for kickoff in a couple days, this team looks absolutely awful. Eli finished the preseason completing under 50% of his passes, under 200 yards total, and 1 touchdown. Normally, you don't put a whole lot of stock in it. It's your starting quarterback who's been in the league now 10 years. You don't really think that he needs a whole lot of play in preseason. He pretty much knows what he's doing. But this is a completely new offensive system. For the most part, his entire career, he's had the comfort of Kevin Gilbert, whether it was quarterback's coach or whether it was offensive coordinator. He's always had that guy. He's pretty much been in somewhat the same system, somewhat the same scheme. He's been comfortable. So now you're completely changing things around. You bring in the West Coast system, a new offensive coordinator, a lot of new tools on offense in terms of your running game, some new faces on the wide receiving core, and no tight end, which we speak of. So this is a preseason which you really needed to see a lot of Eli. You needed him to complete some of the, or to correct some of the mistakes that he made in the previous season, especially with practically leading the league in receptions. And he just looked absolutely awful this preseason. First-round pick, OBJ, has yet to step on the field. And I think I saw something 3 to 5 weeks. He's going to be out, and that's being somewhat optimistic. So no timetable as to when you're going to see him. And when he's finally healthy to play, he hasn't been on the field at all. He's going to have zero chemistry with Eli. He's still going to need time to kind of learn the system and learn the steps and everything else. So I don't know what you can expect out of him throughout the majority of the season. It's going to be kind of what you dealt with Prince McNamara his first season, where he didn't really get on the field much the first year. He was injured a lot, and when he did get on the field, he looked absolutely awful. I mean, now he's a quality cornerback, but we all remember what his rookie year looked like. Now your run game looks pretty good. Eli and the receivers have no grasp on the special system, and they look extremely uncomfortable. So do you, as a Giants fan, have legitimate concerns for the G-men, or will they right the ship sooner than they did last year when they started 0-6?
Well, you know what? Normally, I probably would have, but when I look around the rest of the division itself is not... there's not much of a threat really to from the rest of the divisional opponents, right? I mean, still their biggest threat right now is the Eagles, and the Eagles I would argue are not as good as they were last year anyway. So I think we'd be okay. And you know what? Yes, Eli didn't produce that much this preseason, but preseason for a guy who has that many years in the league isn't really about production. Preseason is more of preseason practice. I mean, I don't know.
And typically I would completely agree with you on that, but with the new offensive system and coming off a year in which he had how many interceptions was it? 27. Don't you think he needed a little bit more polishing? I mean, the offensive coordinator came out and said that he expects a 70% completion percentage, or that he expects you had to complete 70% of his passes, and he was under 50%.
Maybe so, but also the Giants have one thing this year that they didn't have last year, and that's a running game. I mean, just, you know, you can say what the hell you want about it being a passing league, blah, blah, blah. We all know the days of the feature back is pretty much out the window. But, you know, if you have to throw the ball 40 or 50 times a game, no matter what, you know, your completion percentage is going to go down. I mean, yes, okay, the 27 interceptions, eh. But also in his defense, his O-line was crap. I mean, you know what? Look, from my perspective, this is what I saw from the Giants last year. I saw a disorganized team. I saw a team that took so long to get the play call in that they're running to the line. You're not getting a chance to make a good read. You're just making one or two adjustments. You're snapping the ball, and you're trying to get the playoff before the play clock expires. That's what I saw. What I saw in preseason was a team that, yes, still has chemistry issues. And when you think about how many parts changed on the offense, I mean, it's basically an entirely new offensive line. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think there's one, maybe two players returning from last year on the offensive line. It's a totally new tight end.
Who is your tight end? you have a tight end?
Yes, I think we're carrying two of them, or maybe even three of them, and I can tell you any of their names because I've never heard of any of them.
Exactly. An offensive line, I don't know, I just don't feel like it was addressed properly. Now, I know Jerry Reese has a history of drafting to the board. He drafts best player available. He doesn't draft to the team needs. But at the same time, you took OBJ. He's yet to step on the field. He had injury concerns coming in, and you passed up on a couple of really decent offensive linemen, guys who could have come in and started right away. Maybe not a left tackle or left guard, but guys who could have come in and started at right guard or right tackle.
Yeah,
but, and at least helped the old line.
Yeah, okay. You can't say that, though, right? Because, look, Eli is a right-handed quarterback. And on top of that, Eli is a right-handed quarterback with limited, at best, mobility in the pocket. So you don't need a rookie left guard or left tackle to come in and learn the game. You need a veteran, no matter what, point blank.
Did you get that?
Close. Look, I mean, also, the Giants' offensive scheme, passing game, is predicated on something they weren't doing before. It's actually very similar to the Broncos' current offense and the Broncos' old offense under Shanahan, where there's a lot of move in the pocket. Right. It's no more just drop back and throw. It's, you know, move the pocket, you know, a lot more play action, a lot of high percentage passes. And look, this team didn't get where they were a few years ago because they were a bad team. Right. I mean, the Giants know how to win. I mean, you can look at how many teams that. Their roster, their depth chart is filled with a bunch of big name stars making tons of money, and they're lucky if they get $500 at the end of the season.
I'm going to mention one more thing about the Giants in terms of their offensive line. You mentioning concerns. Your starting center right now, a man named J.D. Walton, did not play a single game last year. Did not play a game the year before that. Played four games the year before that. Now, he started all 16 games in 2010-2011 for Denver, only four games in 12. He was on Denver and Washington last year, did not start at all. And this is the guy who is going to be handing the ball off to Eli. You got Brandon Mosley and Justin Pugh on the right side, Pugh's returning. And then you have Will Beattie and Weston Richburg on the left side.
Okay. But that makes sense. Will Beattie is by far the veteran and the best offensive lineman. It makes sense he's not over there.
Right. No, I understand that. But you have confidence in Weston Richburg? and Brandon Mosley and J.D. Walton.
Okay, but here's the thing, though. Here's the other part of it, though, right? If you're looking at what's going on, he's the look, I think any team who has a veteran quarterback worth his paycheck can make it work, right? You don't need, you know, if you, all you're asking your offensive lineman to do basically is to hold the ball, to hold the blocks for 1 or 2 seconds, give you a chance to get one, maybe two looks down the field. And then you have veteran guys in the backfield also, right? You have Rashard Jennings. You have,
but your running game looks good. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, Rashard Jennings is a decent running back. Peyton Hillis has shown good moments in the past, and Andre Williams looks like an absolute beast. If he can get some good blocking, and he can find some holes, and Henry Heinisky can open up some lanes for him, which he's fully capable of doing. If you have a good quality fullback there, Andre Williams is gonna be a star. Okay. So I have no doubt about that.
Okay, so I have a question for you since you're talking about Heinisky here. So you had a chance to get, I get you did no team carries two fullbacks, right? But you had John Connor and Heinisky on your roster, right? Meanwhile, you have a big question mark at tight end. Wouldn't you try to convert the fullback into a tight end?
Connor's hands were never really.
But you don't. Great. He doesn't have.
Connor's not a good. I don't know. Connor was a good special teams guy. Connor's a guy who can just lay you out and truck over people. But he wasn't a great running back. He wasn't a great pass catcher.
He doesn't need to do that. He needs to be the sixth guy on the line to down block, to chip the edge, to take the linebacker out of the play. That's what you need.
53 minutes. Somebody's got to be the odd man out.
I understand. And I'm sure John Connor carries a pretty nice price tag with him, too. I'm just.
No, I don't think so. But
for a fullback, playing as long as he has and as well as he does, I'm sure he's up there in his fullback salary.
He couldn't make it with the Jets, and Rex loved him. Okay, so as a Giants fan, are you embracing the fact that you have these quality running backs and a good defense? Are you going to embrace the ground and pound method? Or do you think that they're going to still continue to work out the kinks of this West Coast offense and try to be a stretch the field, air it out 40 times a game?
No. I think they have to return to the they have to rely more on a ground and pound type of style. Look, they tried the West. Well, I wouldn't call their offense last year West Coast.
Now, this year is a traditional West Coast offense. The OC they brought in is implementing a true West Coast offense.
Yeah, I mean, last year was a West Coast-ish offense. and it was, I don't say in terms of the scheme, but just in the shots they were taking, essentially.
Well, I guess in terms of being West Coast offense this year, it's a system where Eli knows pre-snap, and he's telling his receivers pre-snap, you're one, you're two, you're three, you're four. So they know the progression in which he's going to look at the receivers as opposed to just going X, Y, Z, or just calling the play out, and they run their routes, and he just kind of looks around and as he feels comfortable. A West Coast offense is very structured in terms of, okay, I'm looking at you first, you second, you third, you fourth, and if nobody's there, then I take off or I throw it away. And that's essentially the core of a West Coast offense. I mean, I don't know the particulars of Eli's specifically, but that's really the basis of the West Coast system. It's predetermined progressions. But, I mean, we'll obviously see how that all works itself out. All right. Okay. We'll get into some picks later in the week, and we'll see how the Giants end up doing, see if they can do better than the 0-6 start that they're coming off of from last season. We all know the JETS, Jets. This season, however, the JETS, instead of standing for just end the season, as it's been popularly considered in years past, it's going to turn into just exploit the secondary. The Jets' offense looked somewhat like that during the second third preseason games, an offense. Geno looked more comfortable, receivers were catching balls, their assortment of quality running backs played aggressive and somewhat efficient. They don't seem to have a good read on the system. Something that we haven't really seen from the Jets in previous years. I'm not saying they can compete with the Packers or Saints in terms of points, yardage, but I mean, I'm somewhat optimistic about them this season. Now for the concerns. One of which is, I guess, somewhat irrelevant, but it still bothers me. And that's the release of Stephen Hill. Stephen Hill was a second-round pick 2 years ago. He had all the measurables, and yet they couldn't develop him. I mean, guys with that size, that speed, that kind of wingspan, they're too rare in the NFL, and I feel like they should have done more by him. They should have done more to try to develop them. And to me, it speaks to their receiving coaches. It speaks to their coordinators, their strength and conditioning coaches, just the facilities, just a lot of different personnel involved in the organization that they could not develop this guy. Yeah, I mean, was he just that bad of a draft pick? Would they just miss that badly in terms of selecting him in the first place? Or do you think it really was just poor development on the Jets' part as far as Stephen Hill goes? And then I got some other things I want to talk about with the Jets.
So the way I look at it, it's before I say anything, I'll say this. We obviously don't know what the hell goes on in the locker room, right? I mean, this guy could be a total douche in practice, in the meeting rooms, you know. Like,
but he comes across as the Jamarcus Russell of receivers. He does come across that way.
But at the same time, look, I think a coaching staff's job, besides winning games, is to develop their players to be the best 53 men, or I guess 22 men or 33 men, depending how you want to count, that you can put on the field at any phase of the game. And if you have a guy who on paper has the talent for it and you can develop it, then maybe there's something wrong with your system. On the other side of that, though, you can be physically talented and not be mentally gifted for the game. You know what I mean?
I guess my biggest fear with Stephen Hill is that he gets picked up by the Patriots or a team like that, and he ends up being this star, the second coming of Randy Moss or somebody like that, and it would just be another like red mark on the Jets' history of just another failure of a guy they couldn't develop, or somebody who they just messed up and somebody else took advantage of it and turned him into a great star. Kind of, I'm hesitant to put the name Kerry Rhodes out there, but he's probably the most recent person I can think of to where we drafted, never really amounted to anything with the team, then went somewhere else and really became a quality NFL player. Not a star, but somebody who really contributed to the team. Obviously not enough to warrant a long-term tenure because he's since been released by the Cardinals, but he certainly had a few good seasons with the Cardinals and played up to his potential, whereas he never did that with the Jets. And I'm sure there are better analogies out there or better comparisons out there, but he's just the most recent one that comes to mind. And I would just, I don't know, I'd be happy for him to an extent. No, I'm lying. I wouldn't be happy for him. I think that he was an even bigger bum if he ended up getting picked up by somebody else and turned into the receiver that we always wanted to be. I guess it just bothers me that we haven't had an opportunity to have a receiver like that since Keyshawn Johnson. And we finally were able to get a guy without investing a lot in him. We didn't, it was a second round pick, the same as we invested in Geno. It's not like we had to give up years worth of picks to move up and get him or anything like that. It was a minimal investment for the guy who had great tangibles, and we just couldn't make it work. All right.
But that seems to be the story of the Jets, though.
Unfortunately.
Did they get good players on paper, and then they can't seem to make them, they can't seem to turn them into, they can't seem to turn them out, to turn them into the players that they want. I mean, I think there's a deep cultural issue when you think about it. That's the only explanation, right?
All right. Yeah, something like that. And that actually transitions a little bit into my next two problems with the Jets. The secondary is a mess. And we're not the only ones that know that. There's 31 other teams in the NFL that know that. They're slotting safeties at cornerback. They're picking away cornerbacks and cutting others. They're only carrying two quarterbacks to add depth in the secondary. And those quarterbacks are Geno Smith and Michael Vick. Vick, who hasn't played a 16-game season in a decade, it feels like, and Geno, who's only in his second year. And then there's John Idzik, now in the middle of his second season as general manager for this team. And my issue with him in this offseason is that this team is still over $20 million under the salary cap. They had 12 draft picks this past year. They didn't address the cornerback situation properly. They let Cromartie sign real cheap with Arizona, and they let Dominic Lodge-Cromartie sign with the Giants after he was in the building for a visit and they could not lock him up. They could not close the deal with DRC. They didn't even acknowledge Revis when he stated that he wanted to come back. And you know that his agent, he said publicly that his first call that his agent made was to the Jets. He wanted to come back to the Jets. And we didn't even acknowledge his existence. And that has Woody written all over. I want to say it has Woody written all over, but you don't know if that's his pulling strings or not there. Of the 12 draft picks they had, 2 are now on IR, and 4 were released. So no real legit moves on draft day. They didn't draft quality players to an extent. I mean, when you think about who they have left on their team that they drafted, when you have 12 draft picks, you either need to sign, you either need to bundle that up, because you know you're not going to sign all 12 of those players. So they're just garbage throwaway picks. Bundle some together or move up and select and get a quality guy. You have the draft, you have the salary cap space. You have a very deep draft, especially a receiver, and you didn't really address that early on. You could have moved up for one of these guys with bundling some later round picks. So no, you out of the 12, 4 are gone, so you're down to 8. And 2 are IR, so 6 picks out of this entire draft. That's just, I don't know, I don't really think that's a great draft when you think about it a couple months down the road.
But the Jets don't win off of their draft picks, though. I mean, have you realized
Wilkerson,
that?
Mohamed Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, years ago Darrell Revis. Yeah, the Jets have won off their draft picks.
Yeah, but how many of those have... Look, the Jets under Rex Ryan is not a team that rewards inexperience. There's just no other non-like douchish way of saying that. His style of defense does not forgive inexperience. His weird, you know, their weird offense is not really forgiving of inexperience. And it's not just that. Look, if you go into a game with a group of guys who are unsure of themselves, and you go up against a team that even if that team on paper is not better than you, they see the same tape everybody else does. I mean... Look, I admit again once again that I have a slight Michael Vick bias. I still think he gives the Jets the best chance to do anything offensively this season. Anything.
But are you going for the season or are you building for the future? If you're building for the future, you got to let Geno. You got to determine whether or not Geno's your guy. You got to know if he's going to be your quarterback of the future or not. And the only way to do that is to play him.
Oh, okay, I'll give you that, but.
And Vic doesn't even seem like he wants to play.
Vic doesn't. I don't think that it's not that he doesn't want to play. I think he went in there knowing that, yeah, they said it's going to be a competition, but he knew really that Geno is their guy.
Yeah, there was a report that came out a couple weeks, either last week or the week before, saying that he knew from the get-go that he was not the starter and he was okay with that. He wanted to give his body a chance to rest and just kind of take it easy for a year or so. He basically publicly said that.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But, I mean, look, as a head coach who basically you got thrown a lifeline at the end of last season to say that you're going to have your job for at least one more season, why would you not put your best players on the field? You made a move. You got Eric Decker, which I think is probably the best offseason pickup they've made this entire offseason.
Oh, absolutely. I love Eric Decker. Now, is he a legit number one? No, I don't think so. I liken him to Wayne Corbett, and I love Wayne Corbett. He's my favorite Jet of all time. But he has a similar skill set. Corbett was successful because he had Keyshawn playing on the other side of him, not because Corbett was Corbett. Corbett was a great receiver, but he wouldn't have been what he was without Keyshawn. And the Jets just don't have that. They don't have a Keyshawn. That's what they were hoping from Stephen Hill, and it just didn't work out.
Right, but, and that's my point. Right, you need a guy. This is what you traditionally. Okay, I mean, I don't want to belabor this point too long, right? But traditionally, if you look at the teams that have been the most successful teams in the last 10 years, there's this one. There's like one variation of a formula for offense. You have the running back who is productive enough that you have to respect his ability to run the ball. You have the guy that's fast as hell that goes down the field. You have to respect his field. He may not have the best hands, may not be the best route runner, but you can't let him go. And then you have the guy who's your possession guy. I agree Eric Decker is not a number one, but I think the Eric Decker Stephen Hill combination could have worked out. And having a veteran who knows where to put the ball or who can take care of the ball, maybe not his body, but can take care of the ball, I think that's, you know, I think that's the combination that gives them any chance of success this season.
I think we disagree a little bit on Michael Vick and his ability to take care of the ball.
So take Vick out of the equation. Say Vick is not on the team. Put in Vince Young, I mean, I'm just kind of reaching here, put in someone with similar qualities, with the arm strength, with the decent accuracy, but can, you know, can make plays happen. Not, you know, the veteran, basically. You still feel the same way?
I want Geno to start because I want to know if he's the guy. I want to know if we need to invest another 3, 4, 5 years in Geno, or if we have to start looking at quarterbacks in the next draft or the draft after that. The team is not built to win a Super Bowl this year. I don't have any blinders on to... I'm realistic about what this team is capable of. Can they make the playoffs? Yes. Are they making the Super Bowl? Absolutely not. Not this year. And so I want to know what Geno's capable of. I want to know if he's the guy. So it doesn't matter necessarily. If there's a veteran behind him, I want him to start. I want to know what he can do. Did I want to draft somebody this year? Yes. I wanted to draft Garoppolo. That's the guy who I wanted. And I think that he's going to be the next Tom Brady. Oh, by the way, plays for the Patriots behind Tom Brady. They missed the ball. I don't want to say they missed the ball on that, but they chose not to dribble that ball. They chose to go with Geno and see how it works out. And if it doesn't, then they'll address it next year or the year after. And who knows what that quarterback pool will look like. Maybe the plan is to go after Jameis Winston. I hope not, but maybe that's the plan. All right. While we're talking about young quarterbacks, we got Brian Hoyer, Derek Carr, and Ryan Mallett all starting this week. Brian Hoyer returns from injury and gets the starting mouth for the Browns, while Manziel gets to sit on the bench for a little while. Derek Carr wins/walks into the starting role for the Raiders after Schaub gets hurt, and Derek Carr just outplays the hell out of him in preseason. And now the Texans trade for Ryan Mallett after a real disappointing show from Case Keenum, in which they've now released. So which newly appointed starter, and I use that a little loosely with Hoyer because he was the starter last year before getting injured, but which starter stands the best chance of really being the guy for their respective teams? And are the Jags doing the right thing by sitting Bortles and starting him?
Probably Hoyer. I mean, and that's kind of just pulling a name out of a hat, right? From what I saw from these guys, I don't think any one of them is really in a position to really help a team to win 20 games. Hoyer is probably the most talented out of all of them, and that's because he's, I'd argue, he has more experience, more or less.
Well, he has experience. I mean, that's something that all the others don't.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes experience is all you need. Talent helps, but sometimes experience is all you need. I don't see a good year for any of these guys, to be honest with you. But...
Well, part of that is just a... Part of that is just the result of the teams that they play for. Now, I like Brian Hoyer. I thought he played fantastic last year. I think that he's a very talented quarterback, and he should be the starting quarterback for the Browns. Unfortunately, we know that long-term he's not the starting quarterback for the Browns. They drafted Manziel because they want him to start. Fans want him to start. People love him for whatever crazy reason. So, unfortunately, he's in a situation where he's just playing for his next team. He knows that. He's got to make the most of this opportunity. Or he's got to go out there and just light it up like he did the couple games that he played last year and just make it so difficult for the Browns to ever bench him that he makes a career out of it. Now, eventually, he's going to kind of run into a Favre situation where if he plays well this year and, say, next year by year three, and once the Browns are competing for a Super Bowl, they're not going to maintain him because they've already invested in Manziel. So he's a guy who he knows he's playing for his next team, but I like a lot of things that Hoyer can do. Derek Carr, same thing. He looks real good. He looks like he's a very talented quarterback. He's one of those underrated guys going into the draft, but one that is starting to get a lot of mention and a lot of buzz around him leading up to the draft. I think he is going to be a very good quarterback, much better than David Carr was. The problem is he plays for the Raiders. And as long as you play for the Raiders, you're not going to be successful in this league. Then there's Ryan Mallett, who has been talked about for years now with the Patriots, and the Patriots are going to trade him for a first-round pick or a second-round pick, blah, blah, blah. They invested a third in him, and we know the Patriots, they always get more in return than what the guy's worth or what they invested in him initially. That didn't happen this year. They got, I believe it was a conditional sixth or seventh-round pick for Ryan Mallett, so clearly he was better than what the Texans had in Case Keenum, but he wasn't good enough. He didn't show anything good enough to really garner a high-risk draft pick. I mean, it wasn't something where it was a fifth, but it can bump up to a third. It was a conditional sixth to seventh round draft pick. So clearly there's not a whole lot of talent there. It was just kind of the tallest of the midgets in terms of what the Texans were able to really accomplish or what they were willing to give up to bring in a different quarterback.
Okay, so let me posit this at you really quick. Or it could just be that the Patriots just were just having a fire sale and they just needed to get rid of someone.
Well, there was a lot of talk that they were going to release him outright anyway. Patriots, I don't know the last time that they carried three quarterbacks, and they know that Garoppolo is the future. They know he's the guy who's going to succeed to see Brady. So what's the point in carrying a third quarterback? So at this point, if they're going to release him, they at least got something for him in return. So it might have just been something along those lines. You figure, okay, a six-round pick is better than nothing because Patriots can turn around and bundle that in with something else. So it might just be that. But there was just, I don't know, I find it funny because there was so much talk about Ryan out last season before and whatnot, about when the Patriots are going to move him and what they're going to get in return. And there was a lot of talk that it was going to be high picks or at the very least a third-round pick, which is what they invested to begin with. It's possible that it was just that they were going to release him outright, and that was the only offer that came through, and that was that. Now you look at who the head coach is for the Texans right now, and that's one Bill O'Brien. Where was Bill O'Brien a few years ago? Defensive coordinator for the New England Patriots. So there's certainly some familiarity there with Ryan Mallett, and that's possibly why either Patriots called Texans or Texans called the Patriots. Somewhat of familiarity and made the decision a little easier. And the other quarterback that I mentioned in that little grouping between Hoyer, Carr, and Mallett was Bortles. He's a guy who I think is probably going to be the most successful of the four. The problem is he plays for the Jags. It's the kind of same problem that Derek Carr faced playing for the Raiders. But the Jags are sitting him. And it's interesting, we haven't seen this in a few years. A team draft a quarterback, especially as high as they drafted Bortles, top five pick, and they're not letting him play in favor of Chad Henne. And I saw an interesting article earlier today that Tim Tebow is owned in more fantasy leagues than Chad Henne. And Tim Tebow is not even on an NFL roster. And Chad Henne's a starting quarterback. And yet Tebow's on more fantasy teams right now. I thought that was an interesting stat, but it just kind of speaks to the Jaguars organization. Now, this is a team whose starting running back is Toby Gerhart. Their number one receiver is Cecil Shorts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they drafted the big-name receiver. He's going to develop. But there's really no weapons on this team. There's not a whole lot that the Jags are really fighting for this year. They're still clearly a developing team. And they don't want Bortles to get killed. They don't want to throw him out there the same way they did Blaine Gabbert and have him just get hurt or have him go through like a David Carr scenario where he's just getting hit and hit and hit and hit. And he develops his shell shock where he develops his fear of the pocket and it just ruins his career. So I kind of applaud what the Jags are doing by sitting him. I don't know how the fan base is going to react to that. And I say that's important just because the Jags do have a somewhat low-attendant trade. They are a very small market team. They're a team that can easily be moved if the city would no longer support them. So far, Chad Johnson's taking over the team has made a lot of improvements to the stadium. He's invested a lot of money in the team, so I don't think they are in jeopardy of moving, but they still need to sell tickets. They still need to get fans into the seats. And putting in big, giant video boards and swimming pools for the fans and Wi-Fi, those are all gimmicks. Those are all good, and it's some fun, exciting things to lure fans to the stadium, but I don't think that's going to sustain attendance. You need to put a winner on the field. You need to put somebody out there that people are excited to see, and that's Bortles. And we'll see how long that'll last with Jack sitting him. Part of me applauds him for doing that. Part of me is saying, look, you got to see what you have in this guy, and you got to let him get more comfortable in the NFL, so when you do get those nice, flashy toys for him to play with, he's ready to go full steam ahead. All right, a couple more things, then we'll get into some picks for this first season. Head coaches. We got, I think it's 3, 6, 7 new first-year head coaches in the league. We got Bill O'Brien with the Texans, Ken Wisenhunt, who obviously was a head coach in the past with the Titans now, Mike Pettine with the Browns, former defensive coordinator with the Jets and the Bills, Lovie Smith, former head coach of the Chicago Bears, now head coach of the Bucks, Jay Gruden with the Redskins, Jim Caldwell, also previous head coach with the Lions, and Mike Zimmer with the Vikings. Who has the best chance of succeeding, and who has the shortest leash?
That's a tough one. I don't know. I think in terms of chance of succeeding, it's probably going to be Jay Gruden, just because that team is just raw with talent and they just need to be molded.
And it's interesting. I say Jim Caldwell for the same reason. I look at the Lions, and I think that's a team that can win right now.
Yes, I agree, but I also think he's a team that has a short the coach of the shortest leash, for the simple fact that his predecessor pretty much let those guys run wild. And let's face it, the Lions of the last 3-4 years were an embarrassment to themselves and to the league. And I don't think the Lions want to experience that again. Right? They have some reputation cleanup to do right now. I mean, it's not always... yes, winning and putting fans in the stands has not really been an issue for the Lions is very important. But as far as reputation for, you know, for the unsportsmanlike play, for off-field infractions, for on-field infractions, I mean, it basically looked like the convicts are running the jail, as they say. So I think they, as a team, you know, I think Caldwell is going to be in the shortest lease to try to turn some of that around. But I do agree with you that talent-wise, they're a team that definitely can win now. The problem is can win on paper and can close and know how to win games. In reality, they seem to be on very opposite sides for the Lions right now.
It's funny, I'm looking at the names and the team and the respective teams that these names go with, and I feel like some of these teams got the wrong guys and head coach. Jim Caldwell with the Lions, to me, doesn't fit. The Lions were a team that, like you said, they need a ton of discipline. They need somebody who's going to come in and bring not quite a Greg Schiano type of feel to the team, but somebody who's going to keep their guys in line and instill some kind of discipline and instill values and have this team reach their potential. And to me, Jim Caldwell's just not that guy. You look at what he accomplished with the Colts, and it was nothing. He let Peyton Manning run the team, and as soon as Peyton Manning was injured and out, the team fell apart, and he wasn't able to do anything to stop the bleeding. And that cost him his job in Indianapolis. And so I just don't see him being a great fit with the Lions. I look at a guy like Lovie Smith, and I think that would have been a great fit with him to come into the Lions and really kind of take ownership of those players and get those guys to lead him. He's a guy that people want to follow. He's just one of those natural leaders.
Okay, so I don't want to cut you off here, but here's another problem that the Lions have. I will bet you that if you poll every available head coach that was available this offseason, no one really wanted that Lions job.
You think, okay, who? If you were a head coach in the league and you had your choice between the Lions and the Redskins, coaching Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson, Reggie Bush, or being employed by Dan Snyder and dealing with the circus that is RG3?
Honestly, I would take the Redskins.
Mm. That's interesting. I would run as fast as I can away from the Redskins truck. Jay Gruden's the guy who I think is on the shortest leash, because that's a team I would not want to go near. I'd rather coach the Browns with all their inconsistency in terms of ownership and general management and the issues with Josh Gordon and Johnny Manziel and everything like that. The Redskins are the one team I would not want to coach, just because you have a meddlesome owner in Dan Snyder. You have inconsistency at the GM position. You have RG3, who basically can write his own ticket, but yet is not living up to what he was supposed to be. You have a backup quarterback in Kirk Cousins, who should be a star in this league, but because RG3 is the name and is the brand, he's not getting a chance to shine, and they won't trade him because they know they need a quality backup, because RG3 has not proven himself to be healthy enough or reliable enough as a starter. You have Alfred Morris, who had a great rookie season, and then fell off a little bit last year, mostly because of the issues with RG3. I mean, he just didn't have a lot of room to move around. Now you bring Deshaun Jackson into the mix, who's had issues in the past with certain things. I think the Redskins are a mess of a team. And, I mean, I wish Jay Gruden all the best, but I don't see how that's going to work out. I think he's the guy who has the shortest leash, just because of the expectation with RG3 and the fact that Dan Snyder is very impulsive and has not made great football decisions in the past. Bill O'Brien with the Texans. Texans have tons of talent on the defensive side. They have a decent amount of talent on the offensive side. I mean, you look at their names. You have Andre Johnson, who, yeah, he's getting older. He's at the end of his career, but Andre Johnson's still a great receiver. You have Arian Foster, who, again, still injury prone, but still a good running back. I mean, this was a team that was a Super Bowl contender 2 years ago. They haven't lost that many of their players. They're still a good team, just in a division with the Colts right now, which is tough. And they just had issues at quarterback position the past couple of years. I don't think Bill O'Brien is capable of doing it. Ken Whisenhunt, I think, is definitely a quality guy. I think he's a good fit for the Titans. They're a young team. They're building. He's going to do okay with that team. I don't know that he's going to be there as long as Jeff Fisher was, but I like the direction Titans are going with some of the young guys that they have, especially on the offensive side in terms of their running backs, quarterback, and tight ends. Mike Penn with the Browns. He'll be gone in 2 years because of the Browns. We said Lovie and the Bucks. The Bucks, I think, are going to compete for a playoff spot this year. And then Zimmer with the Vikings. I mean, you have Adrian Peterson. He's going to do half your job for you. All right. One more thing. We'll do some picks. Wes Welker, story just came out a couple hours ago regarding his suspension. Now, first thing about Wes Welker is he sustained 3 concussions in 10 months, and now he's suspended 4 games due to a violation of PED policy. The initial report that I saw that he took ecstasy and amphetamines at the Kentucky Derby. You know, rich people problems, white boy problems, things like that. Now, he only signed a 2-year deal with the Broncos, making this his last season under contract. Any chances with them next year? Any chances on the NFL roster next year? You look at Wes Welker, he's 33 years old, he's been in the league 10 years, he had 841 receptions going into the season, but again, 3 concussions in 10 months, and now you have suspension due to PED policy. I think his next one, he's gone for this season. Anybody taking a chance on him next year?
Okay, so this is what's going to come down to for Welker's career. If Peyton Manning retires at the end of the season, Wes Welker is gone. If Manning's back next season, then he has a shot. Anything other than Manning coming back, he's done. Maybe he might get a few calls. Maybe he might do make a couple of training camps. But I think he's going to eventually just kind of fade away. I think his career is essentially done at this point. I mean, I noticed the stats of it was 841 receptions. And I was like, he had to got a decent amount last year. And I'm like, he only got 73 receptions last year.
Yeah, and Eric Decker got 90, and Demaryius Thomas got who knows how many, and Julius Thomas got who knows how many.
I admit
that. Peyton spreads it around.
There's that stat line, you know, of like, yes, look who his quarterback is. But my point is that it's not like he's like a receiver kind of on the rise or still in his prime, even though it's his age. Just looking at the raw stats. I mean, well, yeah, when he was with the Patriots, he had a .118. I mean, but then again, like Tom Brady was like married, to, you know, like stuck to the dude's hip or something. But
I would have picked a colorful way of phrasing that.
Hey, trying to keep it family friendly here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, and you know what? I also think that despite, even if Peyton comes back, I also think that he, as a guy with as many concussions as he's had, I mean, you got to figure his wife's got to been beating him over the head saying, you got to call it quits. I mean, I guess they've only been married like a couple of years now, but still.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you for the most part about Welker. I think that if he comes back after this 4-game suspension, if he plays the remaining 12 games and he stays healthy, he doesn't have any more concussions, then I think he has a chance of making an NFL roster next year, whether it's with the Broncos or with somebody else. But it's going to be a veteran minimum. He's not going to get his paydays are over. He's not getting big money anymore, just A, because of the concussion issues, B, the age, he'll be 34 years old, and C, now he's one failed drug test away from missing an entire year, a la Josh Gordon. So his payday's rover. Now it's a matter of if he wants to continue playing the league, so until he hits that 1,000 receptions, if he stays healthy enough. I think he'll probably do that just to kind of join that club, depending upon how many he gets this year. If he can get 60 receptions this year, that'll put him over 900. Then I think he comes back a veteran minimum, assuming he doesn't continue to run into concussion issues. Because one, two more years, he'll be, 35, 36 years old. He can get to that 1,000 catch club by then. Which is kind of weird to see how the mighty have fallen. He was a guy who was considered one of the premier slot receivers and screen receivers in this league just a couple years ago now is suspended and concussions and issues like that. All right. Time of the year where we pick who we're going to see at the end of the season in the playoffs and Super Bowls. We give you our predictions now, and then we come back and see how wrong we were 16 weeks from now.
Hey, let the record reflect that I was pretty damn good. I was pretty accurate last year.
Usually you were. I think you did. I think last year, what did you say? Niners, Broncos?
Yep.
Close enough. All right. My picks, AFC division winners, Bengals, Patriots, Colts, and Broncos. And I got the Jets and Chiefs getting in as wild cards. You have the AFC, Broncos, Bengals, Colts, and Patriots. So we're both in agreement. We're both in agreement on that. Your wild cards are different. You have the Chargers and the Ravens making the playoffs as the wild cards in the AFC. So we definitely defer there.
So to be honest with you, the only I had a problem calling wild cards for both conferences. I'm sure the Chargers would be one of them. It's kind of a crapshoot who the second team is going to be. So I just kind of flipped a coin and picked one.
AFC is wide open with a wild card just because everybody outside of that top tier is pretty much at the same level, with the exception of a couple of bottom feeders. But there's just so many teams that are just kind of mediocre. So it's gonna come down to tiebreak. There's going to be a ton of teams that are 8-8, 9-7 again, and those are going to be the ones fighting for that last wild card spot. You're going to see the Chiefs, I think, are a successful team. I don't think they're going to take that big of a step back from last year. So I certainly think they're going to be one of the wild card teams, kind of the same way you think you feel about the Chargers. And then again, it's that second spot. I like the Jets because I have a little bit of bias towards them. You like the Ravens, that's fine. They still have a lot of talent there. Anyway, there's just a lot of mediocrity in the AFC in terms of that second tier, the second tier teams. All right, NFC, I think we have a little bit of a difference on that. Division winners I have is the Eagles, Bears, Saints, and Cardinals with wild cards. I messed that up. With wild cards going to the Panthers and the Seahawks. I have the Niners missing the playoffs. They have had too many injuries and suspensions on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, the running game is getting older. I mean, I know they got Carlos Hyde as a rookie and running back. We'll see how good he does. Wide receiver, we'll see what happens. There's talks that Stevie Johnson's going to be released or traded. We'll see what happens. And Mike Crabtree hopefully can stay healthy for the full season. And we'll see how Kaepernick continues to improve. But I still have the Niners missing the playoffs in the best division of football. So there we go again. Eagles, Bears, Saints, Cardinals winning their divisions. Panthers and Seahawks as a wild card. For you in the NFC, you have Cardinals, Packers, Saints, and Giants, with the wild cards being the Seahawks and Panthers.
It's kind of funny. I think we both agree that the Niners are missing the playoffs.
Yeah. Both agree on the Niners missing the playoffs. We both like the Saints and Panthers to both make the playoffs. We defer on the NFC East. I got the Eagles. You got the Giants. And then we both have the Cardinals winning division, and you have the Packers, I have the Bears. All right, your Super Bowl prediction, what do you got?
I got Broncos Saints.
All right, Drew Brees versus Peyton Manning.
That would be a freaking excellent game, by the way.
All right, I got the Bengals and the Bears.
Not happening, and that would be, I don't think I'd watch.
I think the team that the Bengals have put together is dominant on all three sides of the ball. I think in the AFC, they're a young, fast, physical team that when it gets into the playoffs, when it gets into that cold weather, if Andy Dalton can just string together some quality games in the playoffs, I think that that's a team, if healthy, with Geno Atkins and their guys and the receiving core that they have, and Giovanni Bernard and some of the running backs, I think they're a team that can really make noise in the NFC. In the AFC, I'm sorry. And then the Bears, I think their offense is just too good. Cutler is healthy. Alshon Jeffery, Brandon Marshall, Matt Forte, Martellus Bennett. It's just too good. So Bengals, Bears for me. Broncos, Saints for you. We'll come back in 60 weeks and see just how wrong we were. All right, week one. We got Thursday Night Football. Well, no one called Thursday Night Football. It's on Thursday night, but it's the NFL kickoff. Green Bay at Seattle, the defending Super Bowl champions. A repeat of the, what are we calling it, the Fail Mary Bowl from last year?
Yep.
All right, I got the Packers. You got the Seahawks on that one. Let's see, Sunday's games, 1 o'clock, we got the Saints and the Falcons. We both have the Saints on that one. Cincinnati at Baltimore. I got the Bengals. You got the Bengals. We both agree there. Let's see, Buffalo at Chicago. Both got the Bears there.
Dude, there's only one game, I think, that we don't agree on. Or two games. That is weird. That's never happened.
Yeah, we're both pretty much in agreement here. Tennessee at Kansas City. We both got Kansas City. New England at Miami. We both have New England. Oakland at the Jets. Jets, Jets, Jets. We both got the Jets. Jacksonville and Philly. We both got Philly. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. We both have Cleveland. How about that? Both of us picking the Browns in a season opener. Go figure. Rams and the Vikings. We both have the Rams despite Sean Hill starting at quarterback.
Yep.
We both picked the Rams. How about that? I feel so bad for the Rams and losing Sam Bradford. That's a team that I would have picked to make the playoffs this year with the defense that they have and the young talent that they have on the offensive side of the ball with Zach Stacy and Tavon Austin and Givens.
I think Sean Hill will surprise you. I don't think he's going to surprise you enough considering the division that they play in, but I think he'll do much better than you think.
I think they should offer a first-round pick to – I think they should give back a first-round pick to the Redskins and try to get Kirk Cousins out there because they're a team that can really compete. There was a lot of talk about them going after Mark Sanchez with Shadi being the offensive coordinator and some familiarity with the system. I don't think Sanchez wants to go there. I think Sanchez had a great preseason. I think he just wants to sit around and do nothing this season and get a big old contract next year because the only tape that they're going to have on him is a great preseason. So when it comes time for people needing veteran backups for next year, he's going to get paid, I think. So I don't think he wanted to go there and fail. All right, we both have the Rams, like we said there. Where are we? San Francisco, Dallas. We both have San Francisco, the Panthers, and the Bucks. I got the Bucks. You got the Panthers. We disagree on that one. I think the Bucks are going to come out swinging. New system, Lovie Smith. They have a lot of talent on that team. They got better. Even though they lose Revis, they lose Timothy Wright. I think it's a team with the run game and with some of the talent that they have on both sides of the ball and Lovie Smith leading the helm. I think the Bucks are going to be an improved team. I think the NFC South is going to be a very, very competitive division this year. We differ on this one. I do think Panthers are going to end up being the better team then the Bucks at the end of the season. I just think the Bucks are going to come out and surprise some people week one and win that game. Sunday night football, great one to start the season. The Colts and the Broncos. It's Andrew Luck and Peyton Manning. The future and the past. Let's see. We both have the Broncos on that one. Monday night football, your G-men somehow get the first Monday night football game of the season. We disagree on that one, too. I have the Lions. You have the Giants. There's just no way the Giants are beating the Lions. I don't see it happening. And then the second Monday Night Football game, the Chargers at the Cardinals. We both have the Cardinals. We both got very high expectations for the Cardinals this year. Both have been making the playoffs.
By the way, we've had high expectations for the Cardinals since we first started recording this show. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
It's just they look better and better every season. We'll see what happens. All right. As always, again, follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast. Check out the website for all the latest blogs, info, and comments at Fifth Down. Back Tuesday night with a new episode. Fifth Down.